Welcome back to episode 113 of Chess Journeys, Tales of Adult Improvement. Here on Chess Journeys, we love to dive into stories of glory and ratings gains. But if you've been following my chess career, plits of plateaus, pits of despair, are those the norm? Well, they seem to be for me. It's very sad. If you want to support the show, you can go to Patreon, Chess Journeys. And I do want to thank our queen level supporters, Matt Bush, Jay Garrison, Don Rich Burgess, Brandon Hallside, David Schreiber, Lindsay Newell, Jeff Peterson, Tobias Rex, Bob Berger, Nicholas Harrigan, Rich Bradley, Feiner, Fletcher Ray, Sherrod, and our king level supporter, Ian Samples. Thank you so much. Your generosity helps the show continue in all of its glory. Or maybe it's in a pit of despair. Oh, geez, I never thought about that. It's possible. If you want to appear on the show, you can DM me on Twitter. You can fill out the Google form in the show notes. We do all want to hear your story. And if you're thinking like, Kevin, I want to support the show even more, well, you could get Noel Studer's Next Level Training Program. It's a win-win. It's a great program. You can use the code in the show notes. It will help support the show. And most importantly, I want to bring in our guest. We have Sam this week, an adult improver, a chess YouTuber, a chess dojo member. Sam, welcome to the show. Have you had a chance to play any chess yet today?
Hi, thank you so much for having me. And no, not today, but I have studied chess today. I'm not sure if that counts, but I feel like it should.
Yeah, interesting. What did you study today?
So I actually just bought this book this past weekend at the tournament I played. I'm a sucker for when they set up the books at the tournaments. Oh, I'm just like, okay, I need to buy one. So I bought Mastering Your Chess by Judit Polgar.
Oh, okay.
Or Master Your Chess, something like that. And so I've been reading that. It's been really nice.
So you did not do the crack it and sack it method where you buy the cool shiny book, you open it once, and then you put it on your shelf and you're like, I'll read it someday.
Normally that's my method, but this one looked so nice. It feels like an actual textbook. So I feel like I'm really studying really hard because it has that nice like outer shell. And I'm like, yeah, I want to look at this. So I actually decided, okay, drop whatever else you're studying and look at this one.
Okay, interesting. So I guess I'll ask this then. So when you are like studying chess, does it feel more legit for you when you're like, I feel like I'm studying, like I'm doing schoolwork and I'm in study mode?
Oh, for sure. I feel like chess has replaced that need to study and like that want to learn. It has filled that part of my life. And ever since I graduated college, I'm just like searching for that. And chess has definitely helped fill that gap.
Yeah, I hear you a lot. It's funny because I have advanced degrees in this field and people are like, do you read books in your field still? And I'm like, no, I read books in a different field. Chess books. And they're like, what? That's not real. And I'm like, oh no, it's even harder. Try reading.
It's actually harder.
Diagrams and all this stuff. It's impossible.
You can't even just read the book sometimes. I have to set up a board. I have to do a whole bunch of stuff.
I got to say, when I was reading for my PhD, I never once had to set up a board to figure out what they were saying. Not even one time. Okay. So I guess let's go back to the beginning. I always like to hear my guest's backstory. Did you play as a little child? Did you just pick up chess? What does your journey look like?
So growing up, I learned kind of the basics of chess, but not the full picture. Like I didn't know what en passant was until a few years ago. So it was kind of like semi learning chess, semi playing chess, but I don't feel like I ever got to play like the real full game to its extent. I don't even think we had the board set up most of the time correctly. Like I never knew about like the light squares in the corner. Like I never knew that. So until the Queen's Gambit came out, and then I'm a Queen's Gambit post player. And so that was kind of my eye-opening moment to that there's actually something more about chess. I think that what brought me in was definitely openings because it gave me like a false sense of control. And so I was like, oh, wait, you can actually go into this with strategy and there's different ways of going about it, which I was never taught as a kid. And I think that if someone would have told me about that or like showed me a book or something like that, I would have definitely been more interested as a kid. But I just kind of like maybe played with my sister every once in a while. And then the past couple of years since, you know, the Queen's Gambit came out, that was when I really dove in and I haven't let up since.
So when you were a kid, were you like big on studying? Was that something you did a lot?
I think I was a big reader And okay. I enjoyed reading a lot. That was definitely what I was interested in. And then I think once I got to college, I really like dove into studying and enjoyed doing that. And I enjoyed learning. Yeah. And then once I graduated college again, I was just like, oh, wait, I need to fill this gap of wanting to learn and fill that hole.
Yeah. My daughter is such a voracious reader. And we have not found a chess book that resonates with her. She's just kind of like, what? I don't want to read a chess book. I want to read about the Cat Noir or whatever else.
This fantasy
reading.
Book. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I get
like,
that.
This is really interesting. This other book is boring. It's just about, you know, the
pawn structures.
Yeah. So I don't know. I don't know how to find a book that really resonates with her. Speaking of setting up the board wrong, last night, Wednesday night, is my chess night, and we got all set up. My opponent made the first move, and this guy who was walking by reaches down and puts my queen on the correct square instead of the wrong square that it was on. I was like, wait,
oh,
what happened?
God. I feel like that happens a lot, and it's always just like you both are playing like that it's already switched and it's in the correct position. You don't even notice it.
Yep. It was rather embarrassing. Luckily, I didn't get a time penalty because I went down to 40 seconds in that game. It might have been a really
big
problem.
Oh my god!
I'd have been a problem.
Like, I'm actually already out of time.
Yeah. Okay. So you said you came back. You like really started for real with the Queen's Gambit. What was it about that show that made you think like, ooh, this isn't just a cool Netflix show, but it's like something that I might want to invest some time into at least checking out?
I think I was drawn in from seeing the strategy that went into it, which I really hadn't watched anybody play chess other than maybe my sister and my uncle as a kid. And so I wasn't watching any serious chess, and watching them play like that was super inspiring. And I was like, wait, there's something about this. Like, I want to look into this. And then also seeing women in chess was a huge thing, because I feel like growing up, I was very much thinking that it was just a male dominated sport, which it is, but I'd never seen women play chess. So that was also something that was really nice to see and really inspiring. I was like, oh, I kind of want to be her.
Yeah. I think we all want to be her.
Right.
Yeah. I think that's such a great point, that having a female protagonist is going to, you know, bring in a different or a broader audience.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Yeah. I mean, that's really cool. Okay, so you've watched the Queen's Gambit, you're like, ooh, there's this looks deeper than maybe than I had ever imagined. What were those first steps for you then to really get into chess? Did you go hard right away, or was it kind of like a little dabbling and then you're like, well, that's interesting, you started getting more into it?
I feel like I got very obsessed very quickly. I got the chess bug almost immediately.
Okay.
I started watching YouTube videos, and that was kind of all I did for the first, I would say, year. And so all of like, it came out in end of 2020. So going all into 2021, I was just playing the bots on chess.com. And then that was all I was doing, because I was scared of playing normal people. And then I was just watching videos online. And that was kind of my passive way of learning. I felt like I was doing a lot, because I was like, oh, I'm watching all these videos all the time and I'm learning so much. And at the beginning, there is so much to learn, so it does feel like you're learning so much in such a short amount of time. Yeah. But that was all I was doing the first year. And I was just learning openings, studying openings, which you're not supposed to do, but no one told me that. So I was just vibing.
What video content were you appreciating most? Did you start with like Gotham Chess and that kind of stuff?
Yeah, I think I watched Gotham Chess the first like 6 months, and that's the only person I was watching, because it is nice to be entertained and then also feel like you're learning as well. So I was binging those videos, and then I was watching a lot of like opening videos as well. I got super obsessed with the Vienna. I was like, I need to know all of the theory. I was like, I'll learn so much of this theory. And then I was like blundering pieces in real games, so it really didn't actually matter.
Yeah. You're like, you weren't supposed to go there. Oh,
yeah, no. Right? How do I punish this? I have no idea, because I actually don't know anything else but the openings.
Yeah, I think it's funny that we so quickly mentioned Gotham Chess. This is how I know he's successful. My students today, one of them asked me, like, can you actually make money in chess? And I said, well, yeah, like if you're a very elite player, Or even if you're just an entertaining person, you can make money. And they were like, what? And then this kid yells out, Gotham Chess. I was like, look.
He was waiting to say that one.
So, yeah.
No, I agree. He's
so well known. My random high school students who don't really play chess know him well.
Mm-hmm. I feel like, what do they say? Like, he's the first chess teacher, the internet's chess teacher. And I truly agree with that. Like, that was the case for me and a lot of people.
Yeah, I'm always impressed by the range of his videos. Like, I feel like I get plenty out of his videos when I watch them, recaps and stuff. Brand new players are able to get stuff out of his videos. So the range that he has is pretty impressive.
Yeah, and I think it's very difficult to also cater to, you know, someone of a lower level and then someone of a super high level. It shows the talent of being able to captivate an audience like that.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, so it sounds like you're kind of a book learner and you've been working with videos. Was there a moment where you were like, wait a second, chess books? I should get those things.
Yes. I would say it was like maybe a year into it. I had gone to New York and played people in the park. Ooh, and that was a huge like eye-opening experience. I saw grandmasters play blitz against each other for the first time in person, and it was like such a captivating moment and super inspiring. And one day I was just like, okay, let me go to the library, and I picked up Logical Chess.
Oh wow, perfect.
By I think it's Irving Chernev, I think. Mm-hmm. And I picked that up and I started reading it and I checked it out, and I ever since then was like, oh, I am super obsessed with learning this way. And I've always been a person that likes to learn through books, so it's not like surprising to me, but at the time it was such a big eye-opening moment for myself to be able to look and play through games from of all these masters and like actually understand what's going on because somebody is explaining it to me. So it was really cool.
Was your chess in the park your first over the board experience
with strangers? Yes. I had played with like my sister and my partner and then like my uncle before, but I had never played with strangers. So that was very nerve-wracking, but it's probably one of my most memorable moments in chess. Like, I'll remember that for the rest of my life.
Yeah, and it's such an interesting environment too, right? Where it's like, it's pretty competitive. I mean, at least in some of the parks I played at, they asked for a money if you lost and they would trash talk you. And I was like, I can't imagine that being my first chess experience. Like, hey, I'm new to chess. I'm like, you go down, punk. And you're like, okay, I might be.
I think I got really lucky. I sat down with this really nice guy, and he was just like this older man. And he was just like, I think, happy to be talking about chess to somebody who's like, doesn't know that much. And I think that he was like, I think he told me at the time he's like 1400. And I was like, at the time I was like, oh my goodness. Like, I want to be that one day. And then it was super like fun. He was really nice about it. And so I think I got really lucky sitting down. He also didn't use a clock, which was so nice for me because I had never used a clock before. So we just got to sit down for like 20 minutes and it wasn't like a super huge pressure put on my back.
That's really cool. Yeah. When we went to New York this summer, we went to Washington Square and I spent a couple hours playing some players. And then my daughter came and she played a guy and he was so nice to her. It was great. And then afterwards he gave her book recommendations, but they were hilarious. He was like, you need to get Modern Chess Openings.
Oh my God.
Go through each opening a day and learn all of the openings. He's like, that is the secret to success. And I was like, wow, this is not the best advice.
You're like, don't listen to this man. Yeah. I promise.
Like, he's very generous in giving advice, but not all advice is good advice.
Yeah, like, let's not take this. No.
But probably that's what worked for him. So why not?
Yeah, that's true. Everybody is to each their own, for sure.
Exactly. Okay, so you picked up your first book, a good one, by the way. What a great first book. Perfectly aimed at your level. A wonderful book. Where are you at with your chess journey? Are you able to put any sort of numbers on it yet? Are you not getting any ratings yet?
Yeah, so right now, I actually just finished my provisional games for USCF. And finished, and I think I had two pretty bad tournaments the past 2 weeks. So I was 1437, and now I think I'm 1376 or somewhere around there.
Okay, not bad. I like it. But do you happen to remember where you were when you like sort of first picked up Chernev, I'm trying to figure out like, what is our progress looking like?
I would say like 1,000, maybe 1,000 online, like Chesscom.
Okay. So you're playing some online games. Now you've moved away from just the bots.
Yeah. I now play real people.
Excellent.
And I moved away. I finally got the fear out of the way, and I, you know, settled my nerves and was like, okay, you need to play real people. And I remember my first couple of games, like my heart was just like like the whole entire time, and it was super stressful. Yeah. And I think I was just playing like rapid games at the time, which was good because I don't think I could have handled Blitz. But yeah, now I play real people. I play at the chess club, and then I play tournaments now, which has been really nice.
That's exciting. We'll get there very soon. Okay, so you pick up your Chernev book. You're reading it. You're about 1,000 online. You said you're playing mostly rapid at this point.
Yeah, I think I was only playing like 15-10.
Okay. So 1,000's pretty great. How did you get there? Did you do tactics as well and things like that? Or is it mostly videos, playing, and Chernev?
I think it was only, I wasn't really doing any puzzles, anything like that. I was just watching videos and I watched a lot of speed runs of like the openings I wanted to play. So I kind of was starting to get the sense of where my pieces are supposed to go and just the basic rules of chess. And then I think playing longer time controls was helping me not hang pieces and being able to have better board vision, especially because I was playing. At that point, when I was picking up Chernev, I was playing pretty much every single day in my home. I was living with my partner, and then my sister was also living with me. And we were just all the time, hey, you want to play chess? You want to play chess? Oh, so that was really nice.
Is your sister any good?
Yeah, I think she's like probably like 1,000, maybe 1,100.
Perfect. Okay, that's great. Yeah, it can be hard when it's like, your sibling's like, sure, I want to play. And they're like, how does the night move again? And you're like,
You're like, okay, never mind. No, it was really nice. And we would just play for hours. Like, we wouldn't play with a clock, and we would just sit down and talk. And it was very like casual chess. But it was really nice to like get board vision way better from being able to actually sit down in person rather than a computer. My computer vision was actually way worse for a really long time because I would just play in person.
Yeah. Okay. That's really cool. So you had a built-in training partner. Does your sister actually like, is she an adult improver? Is she trying to get better, or is she just having fun?
I think that she's just having fun. I think she enjoys when I talk about chess to her, when I bring up different concepts. Like, I think she enjoys listening to it, and she plays with like her friends. But it's not like an active studying thing. No.
Gotcha. Does she dominate her friends?
Yeah, she does. It's great.
And then are you like the really one who she's like, oh, I gotta play Sam now?
Yeah, exactly. she's a bartender, and she just brings a board to her bar, and then whoever sits down, she's like, do you play chess?
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah,
that sounds like a fun experience. Okay, I can't believe you're at 1,000 with no tactics, man. That's amazing. That's cool. Did you ever start doing tactic puzzles, or are you still like, no, I don't believe in it?
No, I definitely, once I joined the chess dojo, I was like, oh, I'm not allowed to be doing what I am doing right now. I need to switch this up to get better. And so I got the Pulgar Mate in 2 book, and Mate in 3 book. And that's kind of been my only tactic book that I read for a really long time.
Okay.
And I was just I think I did like 900 of those, which really helped my vision and being able to see patterns more quickly. And then I picked up another tactics book, which made me realize that I had never been taught chess correctly. And so that was nice to be able to actually hear things written out that way. Cause I had picked up certain things from videos, but it had never been just like displayed in one book to me. So that was really nice to be able to learn tactics that way and get formal names to things.
Oh, like names to the mating patterns and things like that?
Yeah. And then also like learning the difference between different types of pins, like absolute pins and like the other pin, I forget the name.
Yeah.
And things like that. I was like, oh, there's names to these things that I've been picking up on, but I didn't know like was actually a real thing.
Yeah. And as a book learner, it probably, at least for me, I know it's easier to categorize things because I'm also a book learner when I can see it in a video. Mm-hmm. You know what I do with videos? I often take notes so that I can then read them as if they're a book.
Yeah. It's like, I'm going to make my own little book right now. Yeah,
exactly.
I totally agree with that.
Yeah. Nothing against video learners. I'm very jealous of you. I wish I could just watch a video and learn. My brain doesn't work like that.
Yeah. I definitely take notes of like my opening videos. I'm like, I know there's a file, but I need my own to just like write it out how I'm going to remember this. And then I'll also watch the video because it can help me like just remember pieces of it. But I'm never able to just like, oh, I watched this in minute 10 of this video. Like, no, that's not going to work for me.
Yeah, exactly. It's funny because I feel like I also remember stories a little bit better. So I was watching a Daniel Naroditsky Endgame video and it was like 14 Endgames you must know. And they were all great. And I remember none of them except for trousers. I remember the trousers one because it had a cool name and then he explained the name. And I was like, okay, this I know I'll remember. The rest of this, no way I'll remember. Hopefully it's in the back here somewhere and I'll be able to pull it out if I need it.
No, I totally get that. And especially like the recognition can help with stories. I definitely agree with that.
Yeah. Okay. So it sounds like we're sort of similar learners. Okay. So you're using Chernev. You joined the dojo. When did you join the dojo? Was it right around this time of when you were 1,000 or had you made more
progress?
It was
like, I would say it was like a year, maybe close to a year later. I think I was... practically, I think I was like 1,100. I had stopped playing online for a really long time because I was like, I have somebody in person that I play with every day. Like, that's just, and then also my partner. So we would just play like simultaneouses and we would just play a whole bunch of chess in person. So I wasn't playing online.
Sounds amazing, by the way.
Thank you. It was really nice. I definitely miss like times like that. It was really nice to be able to play in person with people and also just have nice conversations while you're playing chess. Like, it's really nice. So I think I went down, or I went up to like 1,100 online and stopped playing online. So I had no real register of what my growth was for about a year until I joined the JoJo, and then I just jumped like 300 points once I started playing online.
Yeah. I guess why I was asking that question is I'm trying to figure out what the motivation for joining the dojo is, right? Like, I totally get if it's like, I'm struggling and I'm stuck, but it sounds like you felt like you were making progress. So why join the dojo, which by the way, is a great program. This is not a knock against the dojo. I'm just trying to figure out why join it.
Yeah, no, I get you. I think it was, I really didn't have like a strong training regimen. I didn't really know what to do and I kind of wanted someone to just tell me what to do. I also liked the community of being able to have other people to like compare things with, and that was really intriguing to me. But the main thing that drew me in was like, hey, you need to do this, this, and this. Like, it felt like a coach but like without having to have an actual coach. So it was nice to have a set plan of what I need to do to get better, and it worked. So
yeah,
I don't know. I'm glad I did it.
Yeah, exactly. You're a great walking advertisement for the dojo. That's awesome. Yeah, so it sounds like what you felt like you were lacking was like the teacher in school. Like, you've got the books you can read, but you need the teacher to be like, here's what you should read, especially since there's like a million books you could choose from.
100%. I feel like I was getting lost in this Chessable course and this YouTube video and then all these books that I have, and I really didn't know what was, one, for my level, and two, what was going to actually help me the most. Because a lot of them is like, okay, this could help you, but maybe this isn't what you need at the moment that you're at. And so having people put that out for you was exactly like having a teacher, which was really nice. So I was like, oh, thank goodness, somebody just tell me what I need to do to get better. Right. And I'll go with that.
Yeah, I'm happy to do the work. I just need to know what the work is.
Exactly.
Yeah, I think that can be one of the most draining parts of chess improvement is planning, especially if you do it on your own, because then, like you said, there are so many great resources. There are so many great podcasts telling you the next great resource. That's so hard because you're like, I guess I should throw away what I'm doing and do this next thing. And then the next week you're like, I guess I got to throw this one away and do that one.
Exactly. And then I felt like I was never really focused on certain things at a time. I just had like 10 things and I'm like, okay, all of these people told me to do this, but I can't do all of this one at once. And two, I actually don't know if all of this is what I need at the moment. So it was nice to be able to look at what I actually needed, because I feel like I had looked at like 10 lists of recommended books. I'm like, okay, I can't read realistically all of these books right now. So what am I supposed to do?
Okay. So sounds like you really appreciate the structure the dojo brought you. And then the results demonstrate that the structure they've chosen, at least for you, really, really worked.
Yeah, it was really nice to be able to find something that someone's just going to tell me what to do. I don't have to make any decisions. And the only decisions I have to make are the time that I have to fit all of this in my life. Right. So that was really nice. And then also being able to meet new people was really nice. And compare thoughts and do like sparring things was really cool. I had like never done anything like that, like just random positions. Like normally it's just, okay, let's play a chess game whenever I interact with other people. So that was really cool to learn different things with others and be able to discuss.
Yeah, that sounds great. Do you do any of the sparring opportunities that are part of the dojo?
Yeah, I do. I don't do them as regularly as I probably should, but yeah, I definitely do some of the sparring things and like the algorithms and things like that, which I've noticed has at least given me more confidence, if not anything else, definitely more confidence in my abilities.
Well, that's really cool. Yeah, I really think the sparring thing is interesting, because I like this idea of sparring end games, especially like it's, at least for me personally, it's hard to just go over an end game position once and be like, all right, I got it. It's like, well, I have it for the next 5 seconds.
Yeah.
But if I spar it, then I can kind of see like the nuances of it, where I went wrong. So shout out to Jay Garrison. We sometimes do some sparring, and I need to do more in the dojo. I'm like a dojo member that's like the worst member, who's like, I'm sort of in the dojo, but I don't really use it. Which is like, what are you doing? Isn't that the whole point of the dojo?
So. You're like, I'm in the Discord. That counts, right?
You're like, Kevin, you know how you lost those hundreds of rating points? We're not counting that in our average, because you're not even doing the program. That's fair.
That's like, we're not point. Averaging you. Sorry.
Okay. So I'm curious, what brought you to tournaments? So you're doing the dojo, you're doing your training. You've got people in your life to play with. What made you think, I guess I should get out and play tournaments? They're kind of scary.
Yeah, it was definitely a very scary moment. So I actually moved last year from like a whole new state. Like I was in Miami and then I moved to Maryland. So it was like a huge switch. And I had joined a chess club for the first time and was playing random people and seeing them every week, and they actually do tournaments. So it was kind of like, hey Sam, are you playing? And I was like, I've actually never played a tournament before. So it was something that I wanted to get into. I'm a very competitive person, so it was something that I was very intrigued by anyway, and I like playing over the board more than online anyway. So it was like, okay, I feel more comfortable playing over the board regardless. This is actually going to be probably really fun. And then I started doing that, and yeah, it was great. I was really happy about it.
That's cool. So were you worried about your first tournament?
Yes. I actually played in the Open, which was
like, wow,
insane. But all of my friends at the club were like, you should just play in the Open. Like, you'll be fine. And I was like, all right, like, let's do it. So I did, and I was really scared, but I had a really good time.
Okay. Did you lose all your games in the Open section?
I did not lose all my games, which I think was really nice. I think I finished 2 out of 5, which I was really happy about, and I got a provisional of like 14 something, and then I won best unrated. So it was really cool to win money, and it made me definitely want to play more tournaments.
Okay, so first tournament out the gate, you're winning money, you're scoring well in the Open section. Any thoughts at this point in your career that, like, I don't know, maybe I'm going to be like international master or grandmaster or anything? Any thoughts of that going around?
Yeah, I think that I have tried to be realistic with where I'm at, with in amounts of time that I have to devote to chess. But it's definitely a goal of mine. I want to hit, I feel like right now I want to hit 2000 is my goal.
Okay.
Which I feel like is a lot of people's goal in chess, or at least the beginning part is definitely to hit 2000. I know I've heard a lot of people say like, don't aim for 2000, aim for super high. But I'm also like, okay, I just started playing chess like in my 20s. So I'm trying to also be realistic about it.
I feel like 2000 is a very ambitious goal, and if you meet it, you can always extend your goal, right? Like I don't see any problem with that.
Yeah, I think that I'm also a little bit maybe delusional in believing that I'm definitely gonna hit 2000 within like the next like 5 years. I'm like, yeah, I'll get there. Okay. And like I think I have friends at the club that are also like, yeah, you'll be fine. So they're feeding me in that.
Yeah, when my rating was going up a lot, I was like, yeah, I mean, I'm already 1750. I'll probably hit 1800 in like 6 months. And then we're really pushing for 2000. And now that my rating has dipped under 1600, I'm like, maybe my new goal should be 1600. Like, maybe that should be the goal. And I can just be like, yes, I did it. I achieved a goal.
Yeah, no, I totally get that. You're like, actually, maybe 1800. Like,
yeah.
50 points after. Yeah. I feel like I play, because I play a lot of higher rated people in the open, obviously, and every time I play like a 1700, I'm like, yeah, I could win. I have this like absurd amount of confidence that like, nice, I am that level, even though that's not what my rating says.
Okay.
And so I just am like, yeah, I'm gonna win this game, and then I don't, and I'm like, oh, but I was doing good.
Yeah, like I was up +2 according to Stockfish.
Yeah, right. Even though I had like 2 minutes left and they have like 15 minutes.
Okay, so you have this immense initial success in tournaments. Does it continue, or what's the next tournament like?
So I played pretty quickly after that. I played, I think, maybe a month after that. I played my first classical tournament. So that one was a rapid tournament. And then I played classical, which I played not in the open, thankfully. I think I played in the under 1600 section or something like that. And I was humbled, very much humbled. And I think I needed to learn a lot about managing your time and things that you don't really experience just studying from a book. And so that was a big eye-opener for me that, oh, there is way more within just tournament play that I need to learn. So it went okay. I had a lot of games where I was winning and then I ended up losing the game, and I had to deal with those emotions of coming back from a loss. And I had never had to deal with that. And so like in regards to chess, and it was very much, oh, I need to work on handling my emotions within chess, which doesn't really feel like something that you're going to learn from a book. So I really appreciate chess for those opportunities it gives you for growth in that way. And being able to work on yourself. And I realized, oh, I don't have as much confidence in myself that I thought I did in my abilities. And I had to definitely look at that after that tournament, because I had lost to players that I thought I was going to beat for sure.
Yeah.
And it was, yeah, it was a lot.
Was that a multi-day tournament or a one day?
Yeah, it was a 2-day tournament. It was five rounds. Or no, it was 3 days, actually. It was like a Friday night and then two on Saturday, two on Sunday. And I think that I was not used to that energy expending like during that time. I was like, by the time I got to my fifth round, I was like, I'm ready to go home. I don't want to play chess.
Yeah.
I had lost my fourth round so badly like I was up a full rook and I still lost. And we got down to like 1 minute left. It was very sad and I lost, and I got to round five and I was like, actually, I'm still upset about my morning round. I don't want to play chess. And I just literally feel like I just moved pieces and was like, okay, let's go home.
Yes, that echoes so much my last tournament. I've been pretty good about sort of balancing my emotions and accepting losses and knowing that if I lose early in a tournament, it just means that the later rounds I'll have my chance for revenge, because all I have to do is be less emotionally devastated than the next person. But round four broke me, and round five was the next morning. And I realized before I even started, I was like, there is no way I'm going to win this game. Like, I am broken right now. And I just couldn't play round six. I just left and went home.
You just thought you were like,
yeah, it hadn't happened to me before where I was just broken. And I was like, wow, this is a real learning experience. Like, are you so broken you're just leaving chess forever? Or can you put the pieces back together? And thankfully, I feel like Humpty Dumpty and I have like this shell now, but I don't know how strong it is, Sam. Like, am I going to break again when something terrible happens?
Yeah. And it's like, you don't really know how you're going to react until you're in those situations, which is so difficult because you're like, how am I supposed to prepare for this emotionally exhausting moment? And especially when you're playing a classical game, that's like, can be up to 5 hours of like, you're feeling great and then you're down and it's so emotionally exhausting. And then it's like, okay, you have a 30 minutes and now you're gonna have to do this again for another 4 hours. And that's like, yes. How do I come back for this? So I totally get that.
Especially with how chess is like, you can play the greatest game of your life for the whole game until one move and then mm-hmm. you lose and you're like, really?
Yep.
Really? Okay. Yep. We're doing that.
That happened to me in this last tournament. Actually, I just played one this weekend and I had a draw the entire game. It was great. I was like, oh, I'm actually playing pretty well. And then I had like a minute left and I just hung mate in one. Oh. And I was like, oh my God.
Yes.
And it was one of those like, did you really just do that?
Yes, that's what happened to me in my game 5. My opponent threatened a mate in one. I saw it. There was an easy move and it would lead to a drawish position, but it involved moving my king. And instead I grabbed my queen because I was blocking one of the mate squares. And then I realized there were two mate squares and I set my queen back down. I was like, okay, I need to find a different square for my queen. And I realized there were no more squares. The only choice was to move the king. So I grabbed my king and he looked at me funny and then I just tilted it over and resigned.
He's like, touch move.
Yeah, that's
like,
not
yeah,
how it
this
works.
Is me resigning,
like, don't worry,
actually.
I'm touching this king for a whole different reason.
I'm not going to move it. That's the worst though. When you touch the piece and then you realize that it's you don't actually want to do that.
Yeah.
And then you're like, I actually don't have a choice. That happened to me in a tournament a couple of weeks ago. And
I've never done
sad.
That before. I've been playing chess a long time. That had never happened to me. And I was stunned. I was like, oh my goodness. That's bad.
Those hurt really bad.
Yeah. So I feel like our takeaway here is chess is an absolutely cruel game that for some reason you and I are foolish enough to do together. I don't understand.
We have the bug. We can't get rid of it. It's just too intriguing. But I do appreciate a lot of the lessons that chess does teach me life-wise. And so I'm grateful in that regard. I am growing as a person, but it's painful along the way.
See, you're young enough to learn real lessons. I'm an old man. You can't teach me new lessons. No, I too strive to learn the lessons, but it can be hard.
Yeah, it's definitely it can definitely be painful.
Okay, so when you go to tournaments, do you do any specific tournament prep to get ready for them, or you just kind of do your normal thing and then just show up?
So I do kind of switch it up, which I have been realizing recently that maybe I shouldn't be switching it up. Mm. Prior to tournaments, I pretty much study openings for like the maybe 2 weeks before. The month before, I'm like just doing my normal stuff. But then once I hit 2 weeks, I just start reviewing all my openings and making sure that I know my lines. And then I feel like when I get to tournaments, it never matters. And so I'm now starting to realize maybe I should be doing something else. And maybe I should just be doing tactics full time for the moment until I need openings more from where I'm at. Cause we end up never playing lines that I'm studying. And I'm like, am I just wasting my time knowing these lines? I play them at the club, but then I get to a tournament with a random person and I'm like, we're playing some random stuff.
Yeah. I've felt the same. My tournament prep is kind of the opposite of you. I do my normal. And then like 2 weeks before I just do tactics and I'm just like, sort of easy-ish tactic, maybe not for 2 weeks, for that last week especially though, and I don't even really look at openings, but it might be my openings aren't particularly sharp and so I'm comfortable with them and I'm like, all right, it's fine. And like you said, when my opponent deviates on move 6 anyway, then you know, whatever, now it's about understanding the general setup rather than having memorized lines.
Yeah, and I feel like I also, when I cram in those last 2 weeks, sometimes I can actually it hinders me because I start to confuse my lines and I'm like, wait, I saw that somewhere. And then it doesn't end up actually being that. And I'll be in a real game and be like, oh, but I remember that bishop on that square was actually not good, but it's a totally completely different line. Yep. But I'm thinking it's that one. So I don't play the move, even though I see it, because I'm hallucinating that it's something else. And so I think I'm going to start doing what you're doing, which is just doing tactics the last at least week before.
Well, just to be clear, Sam, your rating is going up and mine is going way down. I'm not sure I'm the person to be modeling your moves after. Okay. Yeah, that's interesting. I it's funny because when I was young, I was so good at cramming for tests. And now that I'm older, I feel like cramming does not work as well for me. My brain has definitely changed in that way.
I get you. Yeah, I do feel like it sometimes can hinder me even more, but I'm so confident that it's actually going to help me. I'm like, oh, I know this line. Somebody play the Karo against me. I'm ready to go. And then I don't get the Karo at all. And I spent like 5 hours studying it that week. And I'm like, okay, what was that for?
All right. And then they play the Al Yekins defense. And you're like, actually, I don't even remember what my line
is. I don't even have a line for this. Like, how do I see this? Like,
you heard it here first. If you get matched up against Sam, you know your opening.
I actually played the other day. I played like E4. I was playing white. I played E4. They played Knight F6. And I literally was like, what are we doing right now?
Yeah.
And it ended up turning into a Scandinavian, but I was so confused. I was like, what's going on?
Yeah. I will admit, when I played E4, that was the main opening that I was just like, this opening is why I hate E4, because you can play literally anything you want and I have to have some sort of plan for it. I can't have a plan for everything, people.
Yeah, literally. I'm like, we're just going to figure it out as we go. I actually, my friend Hannah, she plays like 1B3, and that has helped me like be able to develop like a system against that, because I've never seen that before. And I was like, well, if anybody plays this in a tournament against me, I'll know what to play, because we've played like 100 games against this.
Yeah, it's a funny point. Like, I haven't played E4 in forever. And then I was just like, Anders Toth kind of inspired me to, at least in Blitz, just mess around with E4 and play some super sharp things. And someone played, my Blitz rating is so low that someone played the Stafford Gambit against me. And I was like, oh my goodness, I forgot this was a thing. And I forgot what I was doing against it. And they got a good position against me. And I was like, come on, Kevin, you're not this bad. What are you doing?
You're like, this is why I don't play E4.
Yeah, I did win the game, just to be clear. But my opponent did get an advantage and it was very embarrassing.
It's hard. It's hard when people play random stuff. I had a tournament game where someone played like E4 or H4, and I was like, what's going on right now?
That's probably me.
This isn't a good.
And now that I'm like 1350 Blitz and I'm playing wild things, I'll do that. I'll be like, yeah, you want to see a kingside attack? Boom, move to H4.
Move to.
They're like,
it also can be very intimidating. So yeah. I get that. It catches people off guard.
I'm sure Andres Toth would be like, Kevin, that is not what I meant at all. That is not what I meant when I meant play E4 and play aggressive. I didn't mean play like a fool.
You didn't interpret that the right way. That is not what
I meant. Coach Andres. I don't always do it right. I think I know the answer to this, but I'm asking anyway. Have you had a chess coach, or is the chess dojo essentially your chess coach?
The chess dojo is definitely my chess coach right now. I have never had a chess coach. I feel like I will eventually, when I feel like I've kind of hit a plateau. I'll definitely like, okay, I need somebody to look at my games and things like that. Yeah. The chess dojo though has been able to help me with that. Jesse goes over like the graduate show. So whenever I graduate, I get a game reviewed and I'm like, okay, I get to learn this way. So it kind of feels like a mini coaching session during those times, which is nice. I'm like, okay. So that's a little bit nice. And then I also feel like Jesse's kind of my coach, because he also lives in Baltimore. So sometimes he'll go over my stuff and I'm like, okay, good. So I can learn something from it.
Yeah. Do they have any demotion shows? Because I got demoted recently. Like, I had been in the chess dojo and then I didn't do it, and then I like re-entered it and I realized it put me at a lower level because my rating had dropped so much. And I was like,
no, they don't want to call you out like that.
That's too bad. They really should. We'd like to congratulate Kevin on his recent demotion.
he hasn't been following the program, and exactly. That's why.
This is what happens when you don't follow the program.
You're like the poster child for that.
I really am. We really have been a great advertisement. You use it and you go up. I don't use it and I go down.
Boom. We're hitting the average.
Get the Chess Dojo for sure. My goodness. Okay. Let's talk goals. So you said 2000 is sort of your long-term goal. Do you have any short-term goals, or is it pretty much just like 2000 is hanging out there and you're like, that's what I'm going for?
I feel like rating wise, that's my kind of rating goal. I really want to be in the top 100 women in the US, which I think is like 1900. So I'm just counting that as 2000 in my head.
Yeah.
And then, so in terms of rating goals, that's my set there. But yearly goals, I had a goal this at the beginning of the year, like, oh, I want to play this many amount of rated games, which I have not done. I don't think I'm going to hit that. I think I had like, oh, I want to play 40 rated games. And I was like, oh, chess is really expensive. I don't have the money to play 40 rated games a year. So I've kind of put it in regards of like, I want to play this much. I want to make sure that I'm also playing in person. And I've tried not to focus too hard on the rating because I know that it's going to fluctuate. And so I just keep it in the back of my head of like, this is where I want to be eventually, but it's not something that's going to hold me back from like playing more games and, oh no, my rating went down. Like, I'm just like, you know what? It's going to go where it's going to go and I'm going to gain the experience. And I think that's been something I've been trying to work on, is trying to get as much tournament experience as I can, because I feel like I've learned something every time I do that. And so that's been really nice. I feel like that's been part of my goals.
I like that. So you have like a long-term rating goal, and then in the short term, you're focusing on what you can do, which is get experience, play the rated games. I think it's so sad what you just said, that like you have to have the financial resources just to be able to get the rated games in. Do you not have like a local club that meets on a Wednesday night or something and has like, you know, a very low entry or anything like that?
They did just start doing that at my club, but it's just, I live a little bit further away from where it's at. So it's just not realistic of me to be able to go out there like once a week and go and play a rated game. So I haven't been doing that. I think eventually I will, but for now I'm like, also it's kind of intimidating to play a rated game every week. I'm like, I need to be on my stuff like every week, which is a lot of pressure, especially playing against people that I play all the time and know my openings and I know theirs, sure. But like most of them are much better than me. So they're going to know what I'm going to play and they'll probably just play something else so that I don't get my prep out. So but there is a lot of local tournaments where I'm at. I'm in like the DMV area. So there's a ton of tournaments in that regard. So that's been at least something that I've been looking into and I've been playing. And then my club does host a tournament every season, so there's like a winter, a fall, so that's been nice to like, okay, at least I'm gonna play one every season.
That's cool. Yeah, I think that's really interesting, and because I'm playing every week, I think that's another reason why I don't try to cram openings for tournaments, because it's like, well, if I did that, then all of my prep time would be cramming openings for my weekly tournaments. So
yeah,
I've just decided it's gonna be what it's gonna be. If my opponent out preps me, that seems unlikely. We're both 1600. I just don't think that's going to happen. But if it does, good on them, I guess. I'll learn something new.
Yeah. It's like, okay, we're getting maybe 10 moves max. And then from there, we're just playing chess.
Yeah. The other sad thing is there's a Tuesday night tournament that is only like 14 miles from my house, but in Los Angeles, that means like an hour. And I'm like, I can't drive an hour home from work, take care of the kids, and then drive an hour and expect to be able to play a long classical game. You're going to be
exhausted and then also drive back. Yes. So that's a lot.
The nice thing, the drive back's nice and short because the traffic's gone.
Oh, that's true. Yeah. And you also don't have the stress of like, oh, my game later today.
Will
like,
I make like, oh, it well, on time even?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's, I really would like to be able to do that, but that is not in the cards for now. Okay, well, I think this is going to be my last question, but you're a book learner. Any books you recommend other than Chernev's Logical Chess Move by Move?
Yeah, I would say the Silman's Endgame was a huge boost to my chess. It just taught me all the basics, which again, that was hard to just read and like, oh, I know how to mate with two bishops. Like, no, I had to like spar it out with people because I didn't know it by just reading it. But that one did help me just be able to hear it in a concise way and go over it multiple times. And so that one was a really good one that I liked. And then the other one, I would say I am enjoying this one that I just started by Judith Polgar. I'm really enjoying that one. I just enjoy reading about people's games and master games. A chess book that's not a study book that I love is Chess Queens by Jennifer Shahade. That was like a game changer in my life, and being able to read about the history of women in chess and being able to learn about all these iconic players. And also Jen's story is super inspiring. So that was something that like really made me want to be the best chess player I can. So that's a super inspiring book if anybody's looking for some motivation.
Yeah, I've read that. I found it to be really compelling as well. There were so many of those women, I had not heard their stories, and I was like, oh, this is really, really phenomenal stuff.
I agree. Yeah, it was really beautiful to read about all of these different stories by all these women who I really don't know a lot of chess history in general, because I only really started playing the past couple of years. So to be able to hear their stories, and then also Jen's story is so incredibly written. She's an amazing author. So it's really nice to hear how she describes what they were going through and how she implements that into the history. And it was really awesome to hear about all these amazing women. And I was like, I want to be them. Like, I need to carry the torch almost. Like, that's how I feel when I read about them.
That's awesome. And if you want to hear more about this, you can check out the Chess Journeys episode where Jennifer Shahade talked about her book Chess Queens. It's episode number fill in the blank, because I don't remember, but somewhere back there.
I think I have listened to that actually.
Okay. Yeah, I like that episode a lot. Jennifer is a phenomenal chess personality in general, mm-hmm, writer, conversationalist, everything. Okay, so you've read a few books there, it sounds like. With Silman's chess endings, was it really the way he divides it that was so compelling? That's what I found to be really helpful.
Yeah, it was nice to see it broken down into different types of just piece maneuvers, and I had never heard about like the Lucina position. I was like, I don't know what you're talking about, bro. So it was really nice to hear somebody break it down. I also like that he has those little like tips on the side. Like, I can just like write that in my notes as like, okay, this is an important spot. So I like the way it's broken down, and I also like the way that he describes things, and just the way that he writes is entertaining also.
Yeah, I feel like I had read about Distant Opposition from 6 different books, and it was that book where I was like, oh, now I actually get it. Before, the other times I was like, sure, I get it, and then I totally did not get it at all.
Yeah, I'm like counting squares, like, okay, I don't remember which one is what odd means and what even means. I know it means something, but I don't know which way this, if it's good for me or if it's bad for me.
Question for you: if we set up the Lucina position right now, would you be able to solve it?
No, definitely not. I'll be honest with myself. Definitely not.
I think I can, but it's only because I've said that and failed so many times. I took a couple days where I was like, no, man, you're going to know the Lucina. But if you set it up slightly different, even, I probably couldn't like make it happen.
Yeah, that's what I feel like throws me off. What's the one? It's like where you have to like build a bridge. I forget the.
That is the Lucina.
That is the Lucina. Okay.
That's the building the bridge.
Yep. If it's the basic Lucina, I feel like I could do it. But it's when they move the rook over a couple files for the opposition, I start getting like, wait, but what's the first move? So I totally get that.
Yeah. It's. Oh, end games. They are challenging. I had one last night where it was like very complicated, just like tons of pawns. One rook each, but they could take each other's pawns on the other side of the board and leave pawns, and I'm up a bishop, but my opponent has connected pawns and in exchange for it, and I had like 100 moves that I could make, and I was like, oh my goodness, you've got a minute and a half, your opponent has 17 minutes.
Oh,
good luck, Kevin. Don't blow.
That's always so hard because you're just like, I don't even know where to start. There's so many options. And of course, like, you have no time. It's always those positions and no time.
Yep. I just decided there that I was playing for a draw. And the cool thing is when I put it in the engine was like, yeah, you should have been playing for a draw. You had connected past pawns. Like, obviously you should have. So I deprived him of being able to win. I think we both got what we wanted. he was like, "Woo, it's a draw." And I was like, "Woo, it's a draw." And I'm like, yeah. Oh, cool. We could have just drawn, you know, 20 moves ago.
We could have just shook hands and said draw. Perfect. Yeah.
Well, Sam, I really appreciate you coming on and sharing your story. It was a great one. If people want to get a hold of you, where can they go? I mean, we got to at least type your YouTube channel. What are you doing over
yeah.
there?
So I'm BBK Chess or Beloved Bookkeeper on YouTube. So you can find my videos there. I did some coverage of the Women's World Chess Championship. So there's recaps of those games. And yeah, and then on Twitter, I'm at I Need a Cortarito. And yeah, that's where I'm at.
Okay, awesome. Well, everyone, I hope this is that tournament that you have like Sam and you win your section and everything's great. But if you're me and you lose like 50 more points in yet another tournament, it's all right. Take some deep breaths. Maybe even take a break for a week. I don't know. But we'll have a guest for you next week that will hopefully give you some more inspiration and some tips. And I'll see you next time, everyone. Goodbye.